can't measure everything and it will never be perfect, but at least at a macro level, you should be able to say, this is the impact we're trying to have. Are there any measures that taken together and looked at across the board we can use to achieve something?
Society faces some of the biggest challenges it's faced, certainly in my lifetime. The perspective that you do need a capable, competent, and sufficient capacity within your regulatory organizations to make that work. I think this is a lesson that's going to resonate with time.
Hello and welcome to Nowscast, the podcast that brings you fresh thinking on some of the big challenges facing Australia, the UK and Canada from experts here at Nous Group, an international management consultancy. I'm your host, Ari Sharp, and today on Nowscast, I'll be speaking to two guests. Peter Horn is a Nous principal based in London, whose regulatory experience includes working for the Better Regulation Executive and as a director at the Electoral Commission. And Greg Joffe is a Nous principal in Sydney, who leads many of Nous's most important business and digital strategy projects. Today, Peter, Greg and I are talking about regulation. In particular, we're looking at how you can measure the performance of a regulator in order to win support from stakeholders and drive improvements in performance. As you'll hear, Peter and Greg have been talking to regulators to understand the complex operating environment they're working in and supporting them to take a sophisticated approach to measuring what they do. In our conversation, we'll also discuss how coronavirus has caused major disruption to regulators, but how some are using it as an opportunity to rethink what they do and how they do it. Let's get into it. Greg Joffe in Sydney, Peter Horn in London, welcome to the Nowscast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Greg, if I can start with you. Just about every organisation these days is seeking to measure their performance, looking at inputs and outputs to track how they're doing. Why should regulators go to the effort of measuring performance? How can it drive change?
Let's put it this way. There is a large global philosophical fight going on about the role of regulation. And one of the key reasons to measure what you're doing as a regulator is to be able to show your stakeholders, show the citizens of the country, show the politicians, this is why we exist. This is what we deliver. So at a macro view, if nothing else, you need to measure the outcomes you're achieving in order to show you're doing something that's valuable to society. Of course, there are lots of other reasons. If you're measuring things and you're measuring the right things, then you can actually regulate better. And if you're measuring your internal activities, you're also able to make sure that you're working on the things that have the biggest impact, the programs that have the biggest impact, which means that you can allocate resources successfully.
Greg, clearly measuring performance can help a regulator to improve its own activities, but how does it help it to build trust with other stakeholders? How can measuring performance help, say, a regulator make the case for funding from a minister or achieve credibility with the entities that it regulates?
So, Ari, in the same way that different countries have dealt with COVID in different levels of effectiveness, and you can look at those little graphs, which go red or orange or green, depending on how different countries have dealt with it. And I think you can point back to the policies and say, you know, if we take Australia, this is the initial policy. This is how it worked. You see the flattening of the curve. But what you can see is the impact of policy and public and execution of policy on an issue. It's the same with stakeholders and regulators. So basically, you need to be able to show your stakeholders, this is why we exist. And because we exist and are doing our job well, we're doing better than other agencies. So for instance, in the US, there's been a big pushback against regulation over the last 30, 40 years. And in Australia and parts of the UK, you could very easily show the level of economic impact that has come through lack of regulation. You could also show how many people have had their lives economically ruined because of lack of protections, which libertarians have been arguing don't need to be there. Regulators can show that they're having a positive impact on citizens and on the economy and on the countries they live in by measuring and communicating that to stakeholders.
Peter, your thoughts?
I suppose that's particularly true when it comes to that interface between the leaders of regulators and their funding sources. It's absolutely clear, and we've seen over a number of years, where the leadership team are intent on what they're seeking to achieve, and they're clear about that, and they share that with the regulated community, and they can demonstrate over time that they've gained an increased confidence there, the government and the Treasury will continue to fund and will support interventions in those areas. Conversely, with organisations that haven't set out a clear mandate for what they're wishing to do and aren't demonstrably achieving those, tend to find that the funding to do what they wish to do dries up. So if you do want to make a difference when you're involved in a regulatory organisation, be clear about what you're trying to achieve, and you will then get the resources to be able to do that in future.
Greg, if you're a manufacturer or a service provider, measuring performance is reasonably straightforward, but the situation's a bit different for regulators, where things can't always be measured so easily. Can you help me understand the current state of play? How do regulators typically measure performance, and what are some of the shortfalls?
So like many government entities, many regulators still measure performance by activity. And this, of course, is a disaster. To give you an example, when I worked at Austrade prior to joining NAUS, one of the measures they'd used before I joined was number of meetings we had. Now, clearly, the number of meetings you have is not a useful indicator of whether you're making the slightest difference to helping exporters or helping attract investment to the country. Or slight correlation, but very low, and definitely no evidence of causation. So it's the same with regulation. If you want to show the impact you're having, then as Peter said, the first thing you have to do is think at both a societal level and at a program level, what are the outcomes we're trying to achieve? And is there any way for us to measure those outcomes? You can't measure everything and it will never be perfect, but at least at a macro level, you should be able to say, societally, if we're an economic regulator or financial regulator, this is the impact we're trying to have. Are there any measures that taken together and looked at across the board we can use to achieve something or to convey what we're doing? So item one, measure outcomes. Item two, do it at both a societal level, at your overall level, but then also at a program level. So for each program you're doing, be very clear on the outcomes you're trying to achieve and look for the best measures you can use to align with those outcomes.
Peter, your thoughts on that one?
I absolutely agree with Greg on this one. I suppose the challenge is the breadth of your ambition. I do remember there was a regulator in the UK that set out its goal of being the world's best converged communications regulator. When it was pointed out there were only two converged communications regulators globally, it did seem that that goal didn't seem quite as relevant as it could have been.
Peter, if I could pick up on that, I mean, we've talked a bit about the issues that are emerging with regulators in Australia, but what's the conversation like in the UK? How are regulators there considering these issues?
The UK's been considering these issues for quite some time, actually. If you go back to probably around about 15 years to the Hampton Report, that was probably the first time that the UK considered the behaviours incentives for regulators as a whole. Prior to that point, a lot of the conversation around regulation, deregulation was very much at the policy end and regulatory end of the scale, as opposed to what are the behaviours and incentives that are placed on regulators. And in the course of that review, what people saw at the time, even 15 years ago, that there were some regulators who thought clearly about their role. They were already at a point thinking clearly about the outcomes that they had in place. But the lessons that came out of that report and were then subsequently implemented shows that 15 years on, many regulators have made significant progress. In the UK, you'd find it hard to look at a regulator and say, well, there's very few of them that haven't set out their goals. There's very few of them that haven't set out what the measures against what they're trying to achieve. But that doesn't mean that it's easy. It's been really interesting to see, and within NAUS we see quite a lot of this, as the initiatives and insights that move in both directions. Australia certainly has the advantage of multiple jurisdictions, which allow for experimentation and rapid learning. There's no sense of it's not been invented here. It's absolutely fantastic to see a regulator in a parallel state who's solved the problem in a different way and done so more effectively. The UK is starting to see those opportunities with the advent of Brexit, opening up a sort of a different set of assumptions around regulatory regimes and what could be done. I see what's coming up as three broad challenges for regulators in general. The first of which is the founding legislation for individual regulators. And to what extent do their enforcement powers allow them to take the most appropriate route to take action against those people who are breaching regulations? And what that then links into, and it's going to be particularly important as we look to recover both sort of as a society and economically from post-COVID, to what extent does the regulator able to think about economic growth within their statutory underpinnings? So that's one aspect there. The second aspect, and also aligned with COVID, is the extent to which existing leadership bandwidth is taken up by the transformations that are happening in those areas. So both economic recovery and the anticipation of Brexit, to what extent are leaders able to think about their regulatory regimes and approach? And the final point here is the challenge with regulation is not just around, well, actually, let's identify the goals that we wish to achieve, but it's the nature that external external factors change more quickly than the legislation that you can write down. So how is it that regulators not only understand what's going on in the external world, but tailor and adapt their response to that? And those three points together, certainly for the leaders of regulators in the UK, it's what's on their mind for those that we speak with.
I'm interested in the impact of technology, because big data and artificial intelligence are transforming many industries, identifying trends and connections within data sets, often in real time. How can regulators use big data and AI?
So I would say there's two or three areas where regulators need to think about responding to this. First of all is, do they really look outside of their organization sufficiently to understand the new environment that's changing and the opportunities that are in place? So first of all, are they enabling innovation within the communities that they regulate, who they themselves will be seeing opportunities through big data? The second thing is, how on earth can they attract the talent, and what is their value proposition to bring in people who wish to regulate and have the expertise to regulate big data to support and deal with the outcomes that they wish to have? And then the final bit on this, and this is something particularly true when we talk about, we're coming through a weekend, and I speak as somebody who's quite a fan of Garmin, the fitness tracker app, where Garmin's discovered that all the big data that it held, they've suddenly lost to ransom users over the weekend. As a regulator, how is it that you both have access to this data, have the analytical capability to do something with it, but finally, and most critically, are able to keep it safe? Because when an organization as big as Garmin is able to lose those things, how is it that smaller regulators are able to face up to those challenges? So big data presents some real opportunities. The organization has the knowledge, but people don't have the insight of what that knowledge adds up to, so they risk missing things in future.
Ari, if I could come in on that as well. We also find a wide range of capability in terms of, you know, big data and AI. So with all organizations, not just regulators, we would say think about it in three steps. Step one is just do you have your basics right? So once you've worked out what you want to measure, so once you've worked out the outcomes you want and what outputs you're going to deliver, actually setting up your system so you can capture that data and analyze it and produce usable reports is step one. And we have dealt with many organizations that haven't yet got that fully organized. The next step is to start thinking more about the sorts of things Peter touched on. So real-time data, more detailed data. So you can kind of, once you've got the basics right, you can then expand it to think about, well, what's the next layer of this stuff we could do much better? Where what you usually do is develop a whole series of hypotheses, think about what data you would look at, work out how to get that data and analyze it, and then do that and see what it's telling you. And then really, you know, then that's step two. That's sort of the next layer. And then only after that do you really start worrying about step three, which is big data and AI. So our message to most organizations, including regulators, would be get step one and step two working well and start dabbling in step three. Don't take your eye off step one and two while you're shooting for step three.
Peter, when you're measuring performance, you can pretty quickly accumulate a mass of facts and figures. What are some strategies for communicating that data to stakeholders so that it's rich enough to offer insight, but also still easily comprehensible?
So NOW sees this in three areas. I think the first of which is to really pick out what is important and what you should be sharing with your stakeholders. Stakeholders look to regulators to present to them the most important things that they're going to focus on. So you need to both have a consistent basket of measures, because it will take people time to understand those. It's important to have those as much as possible updated live. We need to move from that world where actually a regulator publishes some information and it looks sort of 18 months, 12 months out of date. Actually, live data that's visible to the regulated community really helps people change their behavior and drives that focus. And also alongside that, it's that consideration of, rather than thinking about lagging indicators, it's actually, what are your predictive indicators that are going to say these are the changes that we're going to see in future? There's been a lot of interesting debate around the opportunities and insights that can be generated and the data around COVID. And I think that should then lead into some lessons that are learned by regulators across other sectors. The next bit in this is surrounding transparency on the data. So it's not just about saying, here's the measures that we share, but it's also saying, we have this knowledge as a regulator, and it's appropriate for us to be releasing this data to the public. If you are sharing that, what you then give is you give opportunities to people in the market to be able to do their analysis. So it may be, as we described earlier, that you might not have the internal capability to spot certain trends. Actually, there are what people have described in the past as armchair regulators the people who will be interested in data that you share and who will develop approaches that you might not have considered internally. So actually drawing and listening into what people do with your data can be fascinating. And then that final point, which is thinking about your engagement. So rather than just having a set of measures that you publish in a PDF somewhere or other, to what extent are the leaders of your organizations visible when they're talking about this data? To what extent do you engage with people outside of the traditional channels? And those three things together, we see when an organization gets a clear strategy around the approach that it's taking, particularly for regulators, it's then able to perform its role as a regulator more effectively amongst the stakeholders that it regulates.
The only other comment I would add to that is we see far too many organizations that produce huge wads of paper and reports. And I think as a regulator, it's really useful to force yourself to say, if I was only going to talk to my stakeholders about three or four measures, what would they be? And then, okay, I've got those four now, what would the next four or five be? And then as Peter says, to make sure that they tell a story, because nobody is interested in anybody else, but very few people are interested in anybody else's data. But they are interested in the story the data tells. And it's really important that you're able to pull that story out of the data before you release the data into the public without having thought through what it's telling you, because you'll be on the back foot if other people say, well, this data suggests X and Y, and you haven't realized that.
Greg, have you got some examples of organizations that have taken a sophisticated approach to measurement? What can we learn from them?
One I'd like to start with, which is not a regulator, but one that I thought did a fabulous job. So we did some work with the Department of Defense, helping them run their defense bases around the country. And one of the things that had happened, like many service businesses, was that the most recent incident would get lots of noise. So if a light bulb was out on a wharf, you know, you might hear about it at very senior meetings, and lots of senior people would be talking about the fact that this light bulb, which shouldn't have been out, was out. But what it meant over this many bases and this many ships and tanks and other pieces of equipment was that you often lost the wood for the trees. So working with the Department of Defense, we created dashboards for base management. And they basically took a balanced scorecard approach. So they talked about, well, who are the customers and what do the customers think overall of the service on a 3-monthly survey basis. We looked at the financials because a lot of the work is done by contractors and thought about, well, are we actually on track budget-wise? We looked at critical issues like defense capability availability. So the point of bases is that defense capability is available. So we looked at, was that defense capability available? If not, where wasn't it available and for how long? We looked at things like any security issues and any workplace health and safety issues. And we also looked at staff and contractor sort of satisfaction. So just getting a one-page dashboard that allowed you to sort of say, well, this is what we're solving for at a macro level, and updating that on a sort of regular basis, and then engaging with your key stakeholders. And the key stakeholders ranged from the Chief of Navy or the Chief of Air Force through to the people running the bases from the defense forces, through to the people on the ground, and being able to be transparent on this and say, well, here's how we've gone in the last 3 months on the objective measures that we've agreed with you, I think really changes the debate from the light bulb is out at this particular base on this particular wharf. So I thought that was a very good use of data and measurement to really have the discussions you wanted to have. So that was one good use of measurement. I think the other is in healthcare. Healthcare has been a leader in Australia and in the UK in thinking about outcomes you're trying to achieve. So some really good work has been done in healthcare about understanding what works, and that's why you're able to give confident medical advice about most things, because people have done the research, they've done the evaluations, and they translate it into evidence-based strategy. So I think healthcare is the leading sector globally in doing that, and it continues to be fabulous. And you're beginning to see that apply to things like social policy. So you're beginning to get longitudinal data sets and understand which interventions during a person's lifetime, both how much do they cost, but also how effective are they, which allows you to think about, well, where do you get the best bang for the buck in terms of interventions? And going back to James Heckman's work, you generally find that the earlier, the better. Other areas where we've seen good data, it's generally been about thoughtful use of data. So it's about being clear, what am I trying to do with this data? It's about marshalling and assembling the right data and analysing it in a sensible way. And then it's about communicating it as simply as possible with as few pages as possible, so people don't have to wade through 50 pages of output to work out what it's telling them.
Now, Greg, we talked a lot about how it looks when a regulator gets performance measurement right, but how does it look when it gets it wrong? What happens to a regulator that decides it doesn't need to invest in measurement?
in this day and age, I think it's almost impossible to be a regulator and not invest in data and in measurement. It's just an expected part of how you do your job. So if you don't invest in collecting the data and measuring things and seeing what's going on, you really don't have an evidence-based view of what's going on, and you're relying on sort of people raising issues with you, which is an effective but not the sole avenue of realizing when something is out of control. So the core of it is about, I need to understand the data that tells me how my industry is going and tells me how we're going in terms of the particular things we're regulating for, and also tells me how various programs I'm working on to try and manage that regulation are working. If you don't have that, what you end up with is actually, again, a wood for the trees issue. And we see this quite often around the world where there's lots and lots of bits of data, but it's not pulled into a comprehensive story. And at the end of the day, if you said, is this regulator doing a good job or not, it'd be very hard to tell. And you see that across multiple arenas. If you think about competition regulation, the ability to distill down to, should I allow this acquisition to go ahead or this merger to go ahead, what will be the impact on, you know, on pricing and on quantity and on the economy that I'm in? That sort of stuff requires having the data to make that decision and do the modeling, but also the ability to draw out the, and what is it telling us? And so both of those skill sets are becoming critical for regulators, both the ability to capture data and analyze it, and also the ability to communicate it back to stakeholders to say, this is what it's telling us, and therefore this is what supports the decision we're making.
Peter, I want to pivot now to coronavirus. You've been working with organizations across the UK as they face some of the challenges arising from COVID-19. What did you learn?
It's been fascinating to speak to chief execs and exec directors over the past 6 months. It's been inspiring to hear about how the way that they and their team have responded to the crisis. It has been impressive to hear about the way that the wider organizations themselves have been able to do the pivot to remote working. I suppose it's probably something that's easier for regulators to do than it is for other organizations, on the basis that a significant proportion of what's done is able to be done remotely. It's been fascinating to hear how in sort of traditional organizations, they've sort of ripped up some of the rules, or they've certainly looked at the right interpretation of the rules. We had an example in the UK where Companies House required a wet signature to be sent in. And in a world where that was much harder, they actually just turned around and said, well, actually, let's be realistic. Can we tell the difference between a wet signature and a signature that's been digitally applied? What's the intent of the legislation here? Let's change and let's adapt. It might seem like a small step, but I reckon for the thousands of people who've been faffing around with wet signatures for a number of years, they're pleased that the regulator has moved and made that shift. There do, though, remain some really big challenges, and I think those challenges probably go across four big areas. The first one of which is the reaction of the move into COVID was very rapid, very delegated, and was very clear around what people needed to do. But as organisations are moving out of the COVID crisis, the ability to say, these are the performance metrics that are important to us, and we're sharing them across the organisation, and as such, that's helping our alignment around what we're doing, is hard. People need to invest the time in doing that. Secondly, organisations have made significant adaptations over the past 6 months, but those adaptations have been delegated down into the organisation. There's no longer the corporate knowledge that says, this is how we do what we do. And as such, in thinking about what their future strategy should be, many leadership teams are running blind at this stage. And we do absolutely recommend, we've worked with certain organisations who've realised this point and who've done a very quick, rapid sample of what's changed in the organisation that's helped inform their post-COVID strategy. A significant proportion of regulators are going to have to modify their regulatory approach. But probably the most challenging point for this, and it's particularly true for organisations that are working on a dispersed basis, the bandwidth of leadership teams has been focused on how do we make sure we're keeping up to date with what's going on now? How do you now start to move into thinking, and this is something boards are encouraging them to do, think beyond just the sort of 4 week horizon into the 6 month horizon, into the 12 month horizon. What is that post-COVID-19 vision? How do we make sure we've got that in place? And how do we set it out for our organisation?
Can you spell that out in a bit more detail? What are some of the changes that we're seeing now for regulators that you think will prevail even once the virus subsides?
So I think certain things for regulators that are going to be really important. So first of all, they've had an opportunity to see quite a shift within the regulated communities. So we've talked quite a lot about regulation of private sector entities, but actually a fair proportion of regulators in the UK are regulators who are supporting and guiding the provision of public services. And in doing so, they've seen a shift in relationship with those communities that they regulate, be that from Ofsted, be that which regulates education in the UK through to health service regulators. They've started to have more mature discussions over this period of time. And I think the regulated community have appreciated that they've taken an interpretation that's enabled the best outcome possible. So it's improved those relationships. And I think the challenge there is, well, actually, how do you maintain that as we come out of that? How do we maintain that maturity of discussion with the regulated community, focusing on the outcomes rather than what might have been in the past, a perception that there was a sort of a controller and those who were bucking against the constraints that were being placed upon them.
And one final question for the two of you. We've talked about measuring regulation and about the impact of coronavirus. In many places, the pandemic's reminded people of the importance of a proactive and capable public sector. What do you think this means for public attitudes toward regulators?
So if I can dive in, I think there's very few people, and I've worked in a number of regulators, there's very few people who've grown up wanting to become a regulator. I don't think anybody really understands that until they get into the job market. But we found it, I mean, and genuinely inspirational, the conversations we've had with dozens of CEOs across the UK who've been leading regulators during these very difficult times. Understanding the link between the interventions that they make and the preservation of outcomes or the development of outcomes for society in general has been great to see. I think the challenge for regulators is, do we actually start to have those messages kicking through? I think people will have recognised that government has played an appropriate role in maintaining the right interventions to bring society through this very difficult time. There's obvious frustrations as to actually that performance and what's been there and whether or not the right decisions have been made at the right time. But we remain at a time where society faces some of the biggest challenges it's faced, certainly in my lifetime. And the perspective that you do need a capable, competent, and sufficient capacity within your regulatory organisations to make that work, I think there's a lesson that's going to resonate with time. And I do hope that's something that both the leaders of regulatory organisations, but also those people who are in charge of giving them the appropriate level of funding, have that in mind as we face the economic challenges of the decade to come.
Greg, how do you see it?
I have a longer term, more negative view of the direction we're heading. There's been a 40 to 50 year push against regulation in general in the West. And I think the only people who have pushed back are people who have never left Western capitalist sort of well-running democracies and sort of having this intellectual sparring match about, you know, we're over-regulated. But I do think it's been gathering steam for a long time since Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher. And in a highly connected world as we are, and in a world where people talk only to people with similar views to them, I think there is a growing group of people who don't understand the benefits of regulation. And I therefore think it's absolutely critical that regulators and the ministers that they support need to be able to clearly communicate the benefits that the citizens and the country are getting from regulation. There is a blind and, in my view, very misguided pushback against regulation, and the battle will need to be fought to actually convince the populace that it is worthwhile. I think what's been going on in some of the examples in the US of environmental regulation being pushed back dramatically, but also the loosening of financial regulation basically since the 80s, which allowed the savings and loan crisis, which nothing changed, which then allowed a number of other crises, including the most recent mortgage-backed securities crisis in 2007. These are a symptom of this pullback in regulation because of a push against it by those with vested interests. And I think it's critical that regulators and their ministers use measurement and communicate well to show the case for good regulation.
Pity, your final thoughts?
I think the communication is absolutely critically important. The leaders of regulators will know the interventions that they've made over the past 6 months that have made a difference. And those will have been, in economic terms, there will have been pivotal differences in terms of the capability and capacity within health service organisations. They'll have made a real difference in ensuring that lives could be saved where that was possible. And it will be important for them to make sure that narrative is heard. People need to understand that regulators aren't perfect. People need to understand that regulators can obviously work in more efficient ways and can do better. But they also need to understand what they're there for and what they've achieved. And it's absolutely incumbent on the leaders of those organisations to tell those stories in the coming months.
Peter Horn in London, Greg Joffe in Sydney, thanks so much for talking to the Nowscast.
Thank you.
Great to talk to you.
Nows principals Peter Horn and Greg Joffe there. You can read insights and thought leadership from Nous experts across the world on the Nous Group website. That's nousgroup.com. We'll put a link in the show notes where we'll also let you know how you can connect with Greg and with Peter. If you're listening to the Nowscast for the first time, welcome aboard. You might want to learn a bit more about us. Nous Group is an international management consultancy with over 400 people working across Australia, the UK and Canada. We partner with leaders to shape world-class businesses, effective governments and empowered communities. If you have a grand challenge or bold agenda to advance, we want to partner with you. You can find out more about Nous and get in touch via nousgroup.com. That's all for this Nouscast. Remember to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And if you like the podcast, please rate and review us to help other people find it. We'll catch you next time.